Hello and welcome to the Modern Ear Podcast, where we take a look at classic and favorite albums. I'm Trevor.
I am Barrick, and today let's turn the page back and zap into the 1970s for an album by a band that planted a new seed for hard rock music. Of course, we will talk about Led Zeppelin's fourth studio album that officially has no title, as I figured. But most call them Four Signs or Four.
Simply Four. I was seeing if you could fit Bonham in there somehow.
Maybe later. Okay.
No Paul Jones? John Paul Jones?
No, not too much.
Just stick with the two front men?
Yeah, just stick with that. But you're right. I should have done it.
They're a bit more difficult, though.
Yeah.
You can think for the outro.
One more reason to do it. So, some facts about the album. It was released on the 8th of November, 1971. Mm-hmm. Contains only 8 tracks. Lasts for 42 minutes. And became, one fact in advance before the deep dive, one of the most sold albums ever in the United States.
And it contains the song that Led Zeppelin's probably most famous for.
Yes.
Stairway.
At least, yeah. That's their Stairway to Heaven.
Which we'll get into as well a bit later.
In the deep dive. Yeah, but start with the first listening. So how much do you enjoy the process of the first listening?
Good. I've never really sat down and listened to Zeppelin before. I discovered the majority of these songs at some point. I don't think I'd heard Going to California before, but like Misty Mountain Hop, I didn't think that I knew this song, but just by the name, I was like, yeah. What kind of name is that for a song? And then listened to it and it was like, oh, apparently I've heard this before. But I think that's, you get into that when you get into like these classic bands. If you listen to classic radio at all, like classic rock radio at all, which I did when I was younger, you end up hearing just all these songs, and you just, when you're a kid, and then you don't, it doesn't click who it is, and then you hear it later and go, ah, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like Led Zeppelin, of course, I know Led Zeppelin. I know a couple of songs, but not, I do not know so much from that one. Despite of the obvious. But it's then even more interesting to get deep into it.
It's the whole thing. You know songs to hear them, but you don't know the names. Like When the Levee Breaks, when I saw that listed, I was like, and then you hear the drums at the beginning and you're like, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Later I figured out why I knew these drums. It was not because of Led Zeppelin.
Really? Sampled a lot.
It's sampled a lot, and it's kind of interesting because shortly after Led Zeppelin was done, a new player and basically a new genre came up. And this genre, the first album of that group, started with that start from that song and the drums.
I will go later to that in the deep dive.
In the deep dive, yeah. But I'm glad that you do more. Maybe you know this when I'm telling this, but there's some stuff that you don't know, because I figured there's so much to read about them, and I still got a lot of interesting stuff, but I didn't want to go too much too deep with it because I figured you will have. Then it's way more cooler when I heard your deep dive and say, wow, that's new to me. And because I think there's so much into it, and you're very good in the deep dive. So I'm still curious what I will figure out new things about Led Zeppelin.
I did a bit of a strange deep dive compared to my usuals.
Oh, that's good. I had a strange first listening, I have to say, because I did not sit at home and listen to it. I started my first listening in the car. For whatever reason, I wanted to listen to it in a car. I don't know why.
And how was that?
It was quite cool. And I figured it's quite a good car album. Not all songs.
I would think that too.
Maybe it was like because of the genre itself, I figured from the deep down and in myself that would be cool. Yeah, I don't know.
Did it make you speed? I could see it making you drive faster.
Yeah.
Depending on the track.
Yeah, luckily there's various of tracks. So you could then, well, I did not skip, of course, but it would be smart to skip for between Autobahn and...
no speed limit, okay.
The famous Autobahn. Yeah. I will use this next time when I can come to Hamburg.
So, on my first listen, at the very, very beginning... I had to listen to the very beginning of Black Dog like multiple times because I was like, that sounds like a reel to reel starting, like tape reels starting up at the very beginning of it, which it is. And I just thought that's such a great opening track. And I discovered I don't really like that many of Jimmy Page's guitar solos. It might be like sacrilegious to say that.
You are so good for having, I would say, for most people, unpopular opinions. That's really good. You love Taylor Swift. That's the most popular opinion you can have. But you don't like the voice of Kurt Cobain, or do you like Jimmy Page's guitar solos? That is like for rock fans, like very hot takes.
It might be that maybe I've just heard people doing the same thing. It's because of like the podcast is called A Modern Ear. I didn't grow up with this being the newly innovated thing. And there's some things that he did with the guitar that I noticed on the first listen that when I was researching later for the deep dive that I was like, that was on purpose. Like there's stuff that he does because Jimmy Page actually produced all the albums as well. Like,
yeah. And he loves talking about producing.
They're his babies. And he has very interesting ideas for music. Like he looks to innovate on the tracks, which is really, really cool. This is some of the solos I didn't dig.
And exactly at that point, I think there really comes the modern era into place.
Exactly.
So I think it must be so different to hear Led Zeppelin at that time. Because for us now, that's typical rock. But at that point, it was new, totally new.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to imagine when you grew up like you and I think, with that kind of music we grew up like. And there was rock and roll was like the most normal thing.
Especially when we were kids like and teenagers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that point, it must be like really so different to listen to it.
Like, I think that will be for future generations hip hop, where we hear hip hop and think, oh, that was such an innovative thing that they did.
Oh, yeah.
And
like when
in the future, it'll be the exact same thing.
Absolutely. Like, with somebody in 10 years listening to Enter the Wu-Tang, well, yeah, I heard that stuff like millions of times from all the albums here and that and the influence, and for us like no, that was like the first times we ever heard this, like blew our mind.
Yeah
That is a good comparison. I think
I wrote down also really good opening track. Just a banger. I really like when albums have like a banger to start.
Absolutely agree. And for whatever reason, I think that song could be also called just intro. It's a bit too long for just to be an intro.
Yeah.
But this song has absolutely his place at the beginning of the album.
Yeah. I also wrote, what does this song have to do with a black dog? Because I didn't, even after researching, I know why it, I know it's named after a black lab that kept, that they kept seeing when they recorded, but I don't get why the song's called that. Do you? Did you understand the meaning of the title?
No. And I have to say, later I wanted to focus on the lyrics. I couldn't.
No, I tried that too. I couldn't.
This was like I don't know. I just can listen to it at the all over stuff, and I don't know for sure. But I said even when I really listen to it, I think my picture of it, what it could mean, would be totally different than like for 100 other people. I don't know if that's the way or if they.
That's on the point. Purpose of it.
Yeah. Which we all talked a lot about. I like when lyrics are wrote that way.
And Robert I thought Pine one has quote said he likes that as well. I saw that in one of the interviews with him.
Yeah.
And one thing that I noticed straight away with Black Dog is the bass. I don't know if they even played bass on every track.
Hmm.
Like if John Paul Jones, because he's very much a multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah,
I don't know if he did. I know he played lots of different instruments throughout the whole album. I don't know if he actually played bass on every track, though, because sometimes I just couldn't hear bass.
Hmm. Ah, that's good. I listened differently. I never searched for it. So, but it could be.
Then track two is Rock and Roll. Fantastic vocals on that.
Really good vocals, yeah.
Just as the album goes along, I kept writing down, holy, is Robert Plant amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked in Rock and Roll, there's like a honky-tonk piano kind of sound to it in it. That I dug that. But I've heard that song lots, so I didn't actually have any that much that I wrote down about it. What about you?
Well, I thought, great title. It is a great rock and roll song. Great great singing. I always have to think when I'm listening to Led Zeppelin to the band Wolfmother. You know
Wolfmother? Yeah, totally.
And you just hear very that guy vocals from Wolfmother. He just sings like
woman.
Robert Plant and that came up and I don't know. And that song, I could hear immediately like their influence, even if they're influenced by them or not, doesn't matter. But in general, to rock music. And you just said it's the Black Dog song is a great intro song with the banger. This song is the perfect song for starting a live show.
Yeah.
I think.
Didn't they actually?
So start with that. Bam.
I think they actually used it all the time to start.
Yeah, that makes totally sense for me. As a band, I would also always start with that. In your face, here we are.
That's how you're supposed to start a show. Out.
Absolutely, especially as a band like this.
No, any band, you need to start with a.
Yeah, you're right. Bang. You're right. You need to push it up and
get really the people out face of their seats, make them stand up, call attention to yourselves,
absolutely,
and then do two bangers and then slow it down.
Or keep the volume up like when you watch like the Hives from Sweden, they coming up there. Anyway, their whole music is only in your face.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't have anything that slows down.
Yeah, but they coming out and the guy has this great audience say, we are the Hives and you are not. And we don't care about you. And we will rock and everybody loves it.
The Hives, we should do some Hives at some point.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Absolutely. Love it. And otherwise, I also, I listened to the car and I said, well, that's a cool song for riding, listening in the car. But I mean, that would be even cooler if I would ride a motorcycle. I never ride a motorcycle. No. But it's, I thought that that's cooler like
in
a cool
like an old muscle car.
Yeah, something like that.
Like a 1970s Mustang.
Yeah, and then on the highway in California or I don't know, somewhere. Something like that. That picture came to my mind. And at that moment, the next thing that came to my mind is, wait a minute. For me, Led Zeppelin is such an American band. but they're not. It's British. They're from Great Britain. It always confuses
me. They make
me
you think of it
because of their sound.
Really?
Yeah. For me, I don't know really why, but for me, that sound is American.
All the good, like back then, kind of the bands that started heavy metal, basically, because Zeppelin kind of was in that with Ozzy.
Yeah.
They were kind of all British.
Yeah. In that time, anyway, yeah. I mean, they anyway came out of the 60s, and there was the Beatles and the Stones. And some people say, like, as we talk about history of heavy metal, maybe the first heavy metal song or the structure was like Helter Skelter from Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And I just want to, there's another band. That, and yeah, also like The Who and...
Yeah, also British.
Also British. The Clash, they started punk, but still, at that time,
massive... The Clash are also British too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, The Clash does that for me. I always think of The Clash as being American.
Ah, okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Even though they have a song called London Calling, but
yeah,
it's still...
For me, they're super British, and Led Zeppelin is like sounds like American, but both are British.
And then, so moving on, for the first listen, the next track was The Battle of Evermore.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of an interesting slowdown in the album, because it just it slammed on the brakes, basically.
It surprised me. That slowdown. I was like, little like sitting in the car, like, oh, okay. I thought like whole album will be just part of the one song, bangers.
And one thing I wrote down was, I don't think this kind of song would fly nowadays from like a mainstream, like rock god.
You think
band.
It would fly?
Wouldn't.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's too like medieval influence. Like, I feel like genres now are very specified. This would end up being more like in the dark metal kind of,
yeah,
goth metal that you see coming out of like Norway and or Scandinavia in general.
What could be like an influence in that direction?
Oh, 100%
will be. Influence, right.
And I also was wondering who's singing. There's like a second voice on it. And I didn't.
Yeah.
I was wondering who that was. Turns out it's Sandy Denny. And she was the only person that ever guest starred for guest vocals on any Led Zeppelin album.
Not the baddest.
Ever. Never Tighter. Had anyone else. So that's pretty cool. And again, I wrote down, holy crap. Amazing vocals by Robert Plant. And I was wondering if Taylor Swift was listening to Battle of Evermore when she wrote Evermore.
Ah, yeah.
Because that's her second 2020 album is called Evermore.
Yeah.
I'm guessing no. But
for me, this song had me a little bit phased out, but not in a bad way. It was like almost it hypnotized me.
I actually have it as... I have it marked as one of my top three on the whole album.
Okay.
Which surprised me when listening to it this second time around. I was like, yeah, that's... I really dig that one. Anything else for track three before we move on to the behemoth that is track four?
The only thing is that at first, after the start of the song... As mentioned, I was surprised that it was not a banger, and I was a little bit disappointed from the start. I thought, now it comes, and then it slows down. Oh, okay. But then I also liked it. But it was like a little bit of an aha moment. That's the only thing.
I think it might have been a little bit of preparation for what comes in track four, because you can't just slow down from rock and roll and go straight into Stairway.
That is a very good observation.
That just dawned on me right now because of how much Jimmy Page analyzes how his songs are built, how the albums are built. It would make sense that he would be like, well, we can't go straight from rock and roll into Stairway. We need something slowly to slow it down ahead of time.
Yeah, especially as he knew from the beginning that he has something special with Stairway, and then you have to open the gates That totally makes sense. I did not thought about that in the process.
So then with track four, we move on to the basically epitome of Led Zeppelin. When anyone thinks of Led Zeppelin, they think of the Forbidden Song, according to Wayne's World. You can't play it on in guitar shops.
Ah, yeah.
Stairway to Heaven. What did you think of Stairway when hearing it for the millionth time?
The first thing that came to my mind is, if this is the reason why Metallica wrote Nothing Else Matters.
I could see that. I never thought of that.
I was really like, okay, that's Stairways. Well, you know, Stairways, like, interesting. And then it continued. And even when I haven't done my deep dive yet, I know about what we already talked about, the influence on them on heavy metal later. And the first thing really came to my mind was like, is that the reason why they wrote Nothing Else Matters? Like a super heavy metal band, and then they had like this massive hit, and I could see some parallels about it.
I really enjoyed how they did the build up throughout the whole song.
Oh yeah.
That was really cool. And it's another song though now that I don't know that if this song came out nowadays for a new artist, I don't know if when it's like what over seven minutes long.
Oh yeah, that's
not getting radio play at all.
No, just nowadays. Then they would have to release another version radio edit. Shorter. Absolutely.
And
but that makes the song like that is one of the strengths of the song. Is the length of that time.
You could, and with Stairway, I don't think you could do a radio edit.
No.
Completely destroy it.
And as they think they process and how they work, Jimmy Page would absolutely, he would not care what everybody says, that this song is as it is. You want to play it or you play it not. It is a 7-minute song and it's exactly written that way. And there's no FN changes.
Yeah. Never got released as a single either.
Yeah, they never cared about singles, right?
No, not really. And again, through the whole album, I missed the bass a lot. Like in Stairway, I just thought you could tell the bass was there, but it just didn't. I didn't feel it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through the song, I got a real, or not halfway, in the last third of the song, I started getting a feeling for the Who. Halfway, like at that point, where I was like, makes sense too, because Jimmy Page used to play with two guys from The Who, so there would be influences there as well.
Yeah. How you liked his guitar solo in that song?
There, I actually really like the guitar solo here. The sound is just nice. And it's crazy because with this song, it's the reason why he had to go with the double neck guitar that Jimmy Page is famous for using on stage. Yeah, because he switches between them. He uses acoustic guitar, 12-string, and...
Was he the first guy electric. Who used it?
No, I don't, like, I don't think the famously? First guy, but maybe famously.
He made it famous.
He made it famous.
Could be. Yeah.
He used it on stage because otherwise he'd have to change to three different guitars in one song, which doesn't really work. Not when there's guitar playing constantly. And just the moment where Robert Plant comes back in on the track. You know, there's the break with no vocals, the instrumental break, which was also really nice. But when he comes back in,
I
was like,
I really like that break. Wow. That's maybe the favorite part of the song is the breaks, where only like the instrumentals come in.
My favorite part of the song is Robert Plant coming back in.
After. Okay.
Then anything else for...
Yeah, this is a nice, as again, I was listening, this is a nice night ride song.
Is that when you were driving at night?
It was dark. It was early in the morning, but not the night, the opposite, but still dark. So that's good. That's really good. And in that moment, I can see that on a long ride home from somewhere. And then at the end of the day. Listening to that song. Absolutely.
So after Stairway, Imagine being the song that has to follow Stairway to Heaven.
The rebound song.
The rebound song. Like if songs had personalities, this one would be like,
that maybe could be another show. Me? Like we should like make a special episode about songs on albums that following the greatest hits ever.
The greatest songs ever and the songs that follow them.
The greatest rebound songs ever. It's a good one.
This one was good though. Misty Mountain Hop. I actually dug that a lot.
Oh yeah.
I really like the groovy, really groovy song.
Yeah. And I think it sounds quite modern.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
So this fits more like could also work today. And also at that song it came to my mind that I thought more about their live shows. For I said, I want to be on a live show like, and I don't know why. Something I wrote down. Not why driving in the car afterwards. And at that song, I like thought the first time even more about the production because I think it sounds very good produced.
Yeah, very, very well produced album. The anything else for Misty Mountain? I didn't have much down other than I really liked it. Then we go on to Four Sticks. Very interesting name for a song.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. Did you find out why it's called Four Sticks?
No.
They were having trouble with it, so John Bonham all of a sudden decided he was going to play the song with four drumsticks instead of two, which is why you get the strange drum sound you get in that song. And okay. That's why it's called Four Sticks, because he used four sticks.
Well.
Works.
Works. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of heavy Zap fans, as they call it, I think, will have so many ideas why it called that way and is so different from that version.
I think all the hardcore Zap fans will know exactly why it's called that.
Yeah, but maybe the question is from what point they know. I mean, Sometimes with these bands, they haven't given interviews for years and then maybe 20 years later you figure it out. But and they will be still like for 20 years hardcore fans. I don't know, but could be.
And this song I'd actually never heard before, Four Sticks.
No, absolutely, totally new for me. But Misty Mountain Hop as well. Never heard it.
I'd heard it somewhere, like as I said earlier, but I don't know where, but I've heard it before. And on Four Sticks, I just wrote, holy crap, is John Bonham good?
Oh, yeah.
Like, amazing drummer.
Also, like, very well loved from his peers.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Despite of one guy that is named in an interview with Chuck Klosterman, which I don't know, but yeah. But that's just like, sounds like it would be if you would say, I don't know, Wayne Gretzky was not good at playing assists or something like that. Like that, you just don't do it. It's crazy to say that.
Yeah. Going on to number 7, Going to California. I found this one really showed off Robert Plant's vocal range, I thought. Mm-hmm. Here I actually liked the guitar. And at the 1:40 mark, I wrote the vocals almost sound like rapping, which I found interesting. Mm.
That I have to listen to again. I could see that. I have to listen to it again.
Anything you had for Going to California? I hadn't heard that song before.
I haven't heard it. I liked it immediately. And from the start away, again, I had to think about another song that came out very much later, and that is from Pearl Jam, the song Giving to Fly. And you know the song.
Okay. Don't listen to Pearl Jam.
It sounds such like an influence. So
also don't like Eddie Vedder's voice.
Come on, Trevor. Well, but you like Robert Plant, so I would say what voice do you like? But you like Robert Plant. No, that's good.
Then moving on to the final track, When the Levee Breaks.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap, are those drums good.
That's so good. That I know.
That was another one where I didn't think I knew, but that opening.
That is absolutely
sampled so much.
My note, nice drums, and I underlined it. Wow. So these drums are really, really good. It
really just makes you take notice.
It's not a surprise that I will go ahead of our deep dive. Do you have a guess which later very big band started their debut album with that drums in the beginning? In the early 80s.
A band?
Yeah.
No.
The Beastie Boys started License to Ill with that.
Really?
That's how they put themselves.
I don't know enough about the Beastie Boys.
So the first band, the first hip-hop act that became number one album in the U.S. started that album with these drums and that passage.
Just ripping them off, Beastie Boys.
Yeah. No, Beastie Boys are great. Like, cool guys.
I don't like them either. No, I'm just kidding. Beastie Boys I like. I just don't know enough of their stuff.
Yeah, but the Beastie Boys, well, it's not about the Beastie Boys, but I can see if you don't like the music, but if you go deep into that and listen and reading the stories about them, it's hard to not like them as a group and their story. But we will go pretty sure about talk about the Beastie Boys in another episode.
You'll probably pick them at some point.
Could happen.
I won't pick Beastie Boys, but... Now, any overarching thoughts for the album?
So, just that I think it's very well thought through. So you can really, after listening the first time to that, I was like, well, there was like each song has exactly where it should be. And
yeah,
that is very well produced. And that I think, I'm not a professional, but I thought that all of these four members really know their craft. So I thought really like, maybe you don't like the music, but it would come to a surprise for me when I'm now going to deep dive and people don't think that they're good in the instruments and or like in their singing.
They are and were very good musicians.
Yes.
Like that, you can't, like Jimmy Page before Zeppelin was a session musician for years.
Yeah. And he later, like he also played for Stones sometimes and all that stuff. And really like a big music buff. And that was like also one of the first quotes I read from a critics in the deep dive was that the critics said, well, you can say a lot of things about Zapp and Led Zeppelin. You don't like them or don't like them or you like the story around them and all that stuff. But it's very hard to say they are not very good at the instruments, playing instruments.
Yeah.
So that was basically like my first thoughts. You something like... Something else that came up?
My only thing overarching for the whole album was that I missed bass guitar in it.
Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
I didn't feel like there
figured
was.
Figured out, and especially creating that podcast that you like bass.
Yeah,
who knew? I'm missing one thing, and I had like one note by listening the first time to four sticks. And as I was diving, I was like, oh, I couldn't write it down. I forgot afterwards, didn't came up. I was like, ah! It was like really like, oh, at four sticks. It was like one thought that never popped up again.
So, shall we move into a bit of the deep dive, Barrick?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Led Zeppelin, Untitled, also known as Four, or Four Ruins, as you mentioned, was released November 8th, 1971. Recorded from December 1970 until February 1971. And it was recorded in a mobile studio owned by the Rolling Stones. And they parked that studio outside of Headley Grange in Hampshire, England. And the guys basically lived in this old house the whole time and kind of got away from the bustles of life and just focused on the music. And I think that's something you kind of see or can hear when you're listening to the music, is that they did this kind of just focusing on the music. It's a very musical album, I find.
Yes. And that fits, I think, what I read, for example, about Jimmy Page, and also in interviews, like, to his attitude. There is music, and then it's the rest of life. Like, and yeah, at some point, like, even when with a lot of things around it, when it comes to music, he seems like to be, at least wanted to be, very professional.
The album ended up getting mixed at Sunset Sound in LA. And then the band hated the mixes.
They did?
So Jimmy Page remixed the entire album.
Ah, that I didn't know.
On his own afterwards. Yeah. It had gotten mixed in Los Angeles to get released in April that year. And then they didn't like the mix, so Jimmy Page remixed the whole album in July. That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work. And that's something, one of the most interesting thing that I figured. He produced all the albums from Led Zeppelin on his own. Not mixed, yeah, maybe Jimmy all, Page but was, he was like producing all the albums, right?
No, he wasn't the engineer. Yeah. But what's interesting about engineers in Led Zeppelin, they never had the same engineer twice.
Okay.
Because they didn't want it, or Jimmy didn't want it to be that anyone can take credit for the sound of Led Zeppelin other than Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
So it can't be, oh, they sound great because they always work with this guy. They sound the way they sound because they are who they are. And with always having different engineers and mixers, there's no taking that away from them.
But still, that really is so close about also like with his production for Led Zeppelin, because Jimmy Page never produced another album after Led Zeppelin by no other artist. He doesn't need to, but like when he loves that craft to produce that stuff, you could maybe think, yeah, maybe now Led Zeppelin, the chapter's closed, you could produce the others. And Chuck Klosterman asked him about it, and he said, well, I don't know. Also, nobody ever asked me. I think, like, maybe they thought I'm hard to get to, and I don't know if I would do it, but never come to my mind, like, to produce something that's like his own music.
What I found out, yeah, that's weird, that no one would ask him, but maybe it's just he kind of has rock god status, so everyone's slightly afraid.
Yeah, that could be. Or
intimidated.
Yeah.
So, some interesting things that I found out about this album. The Battle of Evermore was actually written by Jimmy Page. By Jimmy Page on the mandolin. And he'd never played the mandolin before.
What?
He sat down and wrote the song on mandolin without having played it before. The mandolin was from John Paul Jones. He let Page use it. Page sat down with Robert Plant and wrote the song.
Okay.
I find that pretty cool.
Absolutely. Is a mandolin like easy to play when you're a good guitarist, or is it, I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of like a mini guitar, but you'd need to.
But for,
Once you know the basic, what each string is, then probably be set. Because it's not like it'll change. It's not like you go from an E all of a sudden to a C on the same string by moving up one fret. Like it'll be the same structure as as a guitar, just smaller, and it sounds different, obviously. But so I'm guessing it's probably easy. And Jimmy Page is kind of musical genius territory, so
yeah,
it wouldn't be fair to compare to say if Jimmy Page can do this, probably most people can do this.
Yeah, that maybe would be not so good take.
And Black Dog, there's a section in it that has like a call and response a break, like the vocal structure in Black Dog is actually influenced by one of my favorite bands, Fleetwood Mac.
Oh.
This actually is something that Led Zeppelin gets criticized for sometimes, as they take a lot of things from other bands.
Okay.
Also Stairway to Heaven.
Well, I don't mind that. Really, I have to say.
They took the main guitar riff from another band for Stairway to Heaven.
Okay. No, but maybe they used it better. I don't know.
Oh, they 100% used it better.
So sometimes that's the way it is. Just like insane. Some songs are written originally and then somebody else take it. And then again, they shape it more like sometimes or some beats will say, well, that's like almost like they don't even try to change it a lot, but still a lot of things a little bit better. I don't know.
I think the issue people had with Zeppelin was that they didn't credit people for it.
That's something that I can see.
Yeah. Like Jimmy, this is what I was talking about earlier about some artists not liking Led Zeppelin. Jimi Hendrix hated them.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he says they would just steal their music, except for John Bonham. Because, as you mentioned, basically Bonham had respect from the entire music industry.
Mm-hmm. I can see that because in the deep dive I read from a lot of people that said where Led Zeppelin was so new, nothing was comparable, but maybe Jimi Hendrix. But Jimi Hendrix was like the guitar was more in front of everything, not so much the singing.
And this is actually something nice that you mentioned the guitar is in front of everything. I read in an interview with Page that something he did on the album was actually he would bury the guitar in the mix at the beginning of songs and then slowly make it louder throughout the song so that you actually have to dive in and you kind of, it pulls you subconsciously further into the song, listening for the guitar. Mm-hmm. It's actually something that I do when I'm mixing bands is I take an instrument and push it up quickly at the mm-hmm. beginnings so people catch it. And then you slowly mm-hmm. pull it back and then it brings people further into the music.
That sounds smart. So you get introduced, slow it down. You still have it in your head. But you still can combine it into the all-over music.
Yep.
Ah, that I get. Hmm.
I'm pretty sure I hadn't read that before.
What you think while reading the deep dive stuff is the myth, maybe it's too much, or the praise for Jimmy Page more about his guitar, or is it more about his production, how he produced it?
I think it's mainly just about his musical talent in general.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's just, yeah.
Not just one thing. And he seems to have been, he's still with us, but back then he seems to have been like a force to be reckoned with. He was on... Before Led Zeppelin was formed, he was part of the Yardbirds.
Yep.
And the Yardbirds was like the cream of the crop. Clapton played for the Yardbirds. Jeff Beck played in the Yardbirds. Keith Moon. And Jimmy Page. Yep. And that's actually how Led Zeppelin started was... The Yardbirds were kind of done with touring. They were tired of touring and recording all the time. So Page and the bassist wanted to move on, but keep playing as the Yardbirds. So they became the new Yardbirds.
For one show, right?
To fulfill some to fulfill some shows, and not for one show, for a tour in Scandinavia.
Oh, that was still on that tour that was also televised partly. That was still the New Yardbirds, not Led Zeppelin.
This was their very, very first shows. It was where they formed. I don't know if they were
televised. No, that was another one, because they Rob Plant introduced the band there. I saw some TV sets like in Denmark, and they said we're Led Zeppelin, and then he introduces each band member. Okay, yeah, that was after.
No, they wouldn't have had the songs yet. They were still the New Yardbirds then, but they got formed. Page was looking for a singer. He tried to get a guy called Terry Reed. I listened to some Terry Reed and was like, how would this guy have taken over the vocals when you hear what Robert Plant sounds like? And then you hear this guy, Terry Reed. I'm like, I don't think Led Zeppelin would have been what they were if they'd gone with this other singer. He had other things to do. He said he couldn't do it. And then he told Page to contact this guy, Robert Plant. He can sing, and he has the body of a Greek god. And so Plant got him, or Plant joined Page. And then they were looking for a drummer. He had been hoping for like Keith Moon, but Keith Moon wasn't doing
Keith
it.
Moon from The Who, and later, right?
Yeah, because he was in the Yardbirds with Page, but then Robert Plant suggested his drummer from a previous band, who was John Bonham, and then came John Paul Jones. And he had done studio work with Page before, and his wife told him he should just ask Page if he can join the band. So he did. And then they did some shows. Their first show as a band was actually in Denmark.
Yes.
That was the first live show.
Yeah, and also Bremen, my hometown, where I'm sitting now, had some influence on their strategies about television later.
Really?
Yes, because when they started, they had a... Even when there was, like, they already had the debut album, and the debut album, that was also interesting. The cost of the album was £1,800 and earned very fast $3.5 million. So in Great Britain, they were already quite famous. And then they toured through more the rest of Europe, but there was not so many buzz about it. And then they had a show at Radio Bremen on a TV set at a show they called The Beat Club. It lasts very, very long. And they didn't thought it was so good. They didn't broadcast it even. Like, even later,
really, the station didn't like
even
it.
Even when Led Zeppelin later, when they get big, they broadcasted it. And like also then in Denmark, there was some show, and there was TV is not really a medium. So, and that's the reason why for like there was one documentary from one later show in Madison Square Garden. That was the only later TV stuff or pictures. From live shows and all that stuff from that time from Led Zeppelin.
All because of Bremen.
And Denmark. So.
Thanks, Beric.
But maybe it helped also the myth about them. And as we said, they don't really care about singles. And maybe that has to do with what happened at the Yardbirds, because Jimmy Page said, what tear them down was like in their contracts at the Yardbirds, they had to release singles all the time. And he thought that reduced their capability or their novelty and all that stuff.
That's the thing with Jimmy Page too. He wasn't only a brilliant musician, or he's not only a brilliant musician, but he also at that time was also a brilliant businessman.
Yeah. And
he was very shrewd in his workings. They got amazing deals. They got signed to Atlantic Records without the record executives ever seeing them play.
But it seemed that they also had a good manager.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that
yeah.
Also, that together, that they focused also very early on the American market, and that 100% paid off.
It was also part of the reason why the fourth album has no title, is that people started thinking that Led Zeppelin's only famous because of all this hype. And so Jimmy Page didn't want to have the fourth album have Led Zeppelin written anywhere on it. Not even on the spine of the LP. It says nothing about Led Zeppelin. It's just the pictures and the symbols, the four symbols, one for each band member.
Oh, that's smart.
And there's a fifth symbol as well for this, for Sandy Denny, the singer that sang on Battle of Evermore. But that's why there's nothing to do with Led Zeppelin actually on the cover.
That's
they all have their symbols.
Have you also read the story why they choose the name Led Zeppelin as a band?
Yeah, because Keith Moon and what's the bassist's name from The Who? The bass player from The Who and Keith Moon said that because it was initially supposed to be Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page fronting a band together. That was the original idea, a super group with Beck and Page. And they said that if those two were the frontmen of a super group, it would go down like a lead balloon. And so they liked the name and changed balloon to a Zeppelin and changed the spelling of lead because they thought people wouldn't be able to pronounce it
properly. American people would not be able to. That's what they initially thought.
They thought they would say lead. Yeah. Lead Zeppelin. Yeah. I bet you there's people that actually think you spell lead, L-E-D.
Yeah.
Just because of Led Zeppelin. Yeah. I got lead poisoning. L-E-D, lead.
And already their second album became number one in the US and dethrones Abbey Road by the Beatles.
So that I didn't know. That's massive.
That is, yeah. Absolutely massive.
And I really like the four logos that they used. I'll post them on our Instagram, a picture of it. There's a Celtic knot with a circle, a circle with, and so the Celtic knot with the circle is John Paul Jones. There's three circles kind of interlocked together. That was Bonham. Those two they both got them from the same book, like a book of symbols. and Robert Plant's is like a feather inside a circle. And the feather is supposed to represent like an ancient culture that some people think might be the culture that Atlantis is based on. And Jimmy Page, his logo is Zoso. It's written Z-O-S-O with like some fancy stuff with it. And no one really knows what that means. He's never come out with saying
surprise.
What it means.
No surprise.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Some people even call the album that.
There's so many stories about Led Zeppelin that he's got asked to and he just don't commend it. So maybe they're true. Maybe they're not. So
the Led Zeppelin, this album actually also got into, as you mentioned, Helter Skelter earlier. There was the big thing back then with some crazy religious people saying that if you played the albums, the songs backwards, they had satanic meaning. And apparently if you play part of Stairway to Heaven backwards, it says something about Satan, like our great Lord Satan, some crap like that. And I watched this video where it was like almost a town hall style meeting with Jimmy Page, where this young girl, like probably like 14, stands up and asks him about it, because Jimmy Page is known to be very much into the occult. He bought the castle that Aleister Crowley used to live in. There's like this big conspiracy that all the members of Led Zeppelin, except for Jean-Paul Jones, sold their souls to make it in rock and roll. And it's the whole thing. There's with blues music, it goes back to the beginning of blues music with the Crossroads, where a guy sells his soul to become a famous guitar player. And Jimmy Page has a fascination with like black magic and the occult, as I said, owning the house from Crowley. And so this girl asked her, this 14-year-old, I don't think any adult would be brave enough to ask him what's up with all this black magic and occult stuff. And so she said, so I read somewhere that you're very interested in this. And he's like, yeah. So he explained why he's interested in it to her. And then she goes, yeah, and do you think maybe this is why some people think that there's hidden messages in your songs about Satan if you play them backwards? I was like, that is only something like a teenager's.
Yeah. So, what was his response?
And he said, do you know how difficult songs are to write forwards?
Yeah.
It's so much work writing a good song forwards. I can't waste my time trying to figure out how to sneak in messages backwards in the middle of the song. Which makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Seriously. Absolutely. But that's good.
Although if anyone could do it, a musical genius probably could.
Yeah. And especially one who used the reverse echo the first time, as one of the first, for example. The technique. But if there's something you can figure out, then that stuff, like if you only talk about the musical stuff, so you could figure out if he would able to do to produce it in that way that you have a message background, if you don't ask directly this, when you only talk about production, maybe, because that's the stuff he loves to. That have you read his interview by our influence, Chuck Klosterman, with Jimmy Page?
What book's it in?
10.
Is it in the book?
It's an essay, one of the essays, 10. It's called.
I think I have that book. I don't think I read the interview. No, I don't have that book.
I haven't read it. It's quite new. So he flew to London and was able to interview Jimmy Page. And it starts.
Do we need a sound effect to start? What would Chuck say?
That would be cool. What would Chuck say? And then, like, or have a cool quote by him. Well, I have a first one. He said, that's one, the only thing Page really wants to talk about is the sound of the music and how that sound was achieved. He can talk about microphone placement for a very, very long time. Are you interested in having a detailed conversation about how the glue used was magnetic audio tape was altered in the late 1970s, subsequently leading to the disintegration of countless master tapes? If so, find Jimmy Page. He had thoughts on this. And his first question is in the interview. So when you used reverse echo on Whole Lotta Love, were you? And he doesn't even finished the question. And he immediately starts talking.
It's someone that's proud of their stuff.
Yeah. That's
I watched part of, I didn't watch the whole documentary. I watched part of a documentary about Zeppelin and where they actually went back into the house that they recorded this in. And that's where he talks about recording the drums for the final track with the big echoey sound of John Bonham's drums on Levy when the Levy breaks. And they set up the drum sets in the entrance to the building, and just the drums, and put the microphones, two mics, that's all they recorded it with, was two microphones, hung them from the first floor stairway, and recorded the drums that way.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
I mean,
and I saw an interview with the engineer from the sessions as well, and he said that was the first time, he said, as I was recording it, that was, I knew right away, this is the first time that John's going to be happy with the sound of his drums.
Yeah. Real music buffs.
Yeah, that's so cool. They actually, that's another cool thing with When the Levee Breaks. They slowed down every single track except for the vocals.
Ah.
So like they recorded it and then dropped it down.
Okay.
Slowed it, which is super cool.
Didn't find that. What else from the technical point you find extremely interesting?
When the Levee Breaks, I found to be the most interesting one from the technical side. On Black Dog, the guitar sound on Black Dog, they actually triple tracked it. So they recorded it three times and used. And then one thing that I found, of course, the guitar being buried in the mix that I talked about before, with Stairway, with the recording of Stairway to Heaven, the first take, everyone thought it was a perfect recording, perfect take, nothing wrong, absolutely fantastic. Everyone except for Jimmy Page, so they had to do it again. and apparently John Bonham was pissed and then started hitting his drums harder when he came in, and that's then the take that they used because he wanted it to be like to feel the emotion of it coming back when it comes in with the drums.
Wow, he's sound like he could be also be an annoying to work with.
I was about to say the same thing. Would be a pain in the butt, but
maybe the result gives him right.
That was kind of what song was it? The beginning of Rock and Roll actually started out from a jam session.
Oh, that's good.
Bonham started playing the drums from Keep a Knockin' by Little Richard, and then they ended up making Rock and Roll out of that, which was pretty cool. And an interesting thing, as you were talking about the sales and everything from the album and how they didn't really care about releases, the singles that they had from the album were Black Dog was the first single, with Misty Mountain Hop being the B-side, and Rock and Roll was the second single with Four Sticks as the B-side. And so the track one and two. And then...
And afterwards, Stairway, the songs that came directly after Stairway, right?
So the first two tracks on... So the track one on side one was single one, with track one from side two being the B side for the first single. And then same as with the second. So it's, yeah, there's two songs right after Stairway, because Stairway was track number four and the final song on
All songs that was released on singles were like the sandwich for Stairway, but Stairway never was released as a...
Minus Battle of Evermore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, but Stairway, because it became such a hit, people... you couldn't get it unless you bought the album. So people were buying the album, and it was almost like instead of buying a single, they would just buy the full album because they wanted Stairway.
That's pretty good. And could this happen today? I mean, today this music landscape anyway changed. Doesn't matter. Or like even in the 90s to have such a massive hit. But not a single. That would mean that you also know I have no video, right? Because in the 90s, you need a video.
90s, you need a video. It wouldn't have worked in the 90s. For sure wouldn't work now.
No. So I have like the biggest hit, but not release it as a single.
Well, you could you don't have to buy the albums anymore.
Yeah. So. You just listen to the song. It will be in all the playlists. Like, yeah.
It would be on all the playlists. And... just the way that albums are promoted now, I don't know that.
Yeah.
I find songs and albums nowadays where I think, how is this not the single? Yeah. But the record labels pick them now and they pushed it. So it's been that way for a long time. But
the bands think a little bit like Led Zeppelin. Like, for example, for Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory? They released Wonderwall, of course, as a single, but he said, nah, not release it as the first, right? Because then everybody would get anyway crazy. Like, let's wait to the second or third single. And then what happened later in their career, they never played it live.
That's now with Stairway to Heaven as well. They haven't played it live forever. Robert Plant hates the song.
And that was the song that I, in the deep dive, discovered also, like, his approach on writing. Because he, I don't know what time, he said once, like, depending on the time of day he listened to the song, it has a different meaning for him. And he wrote the song.
Yeah, see.
Yeah.
It's a very cool song. Starting with the Renaissance, going to the electric, kind of slower, rocky thing, and then finishing with the crazy, crazy hard rock. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could listen to it too many times, though.
Yeah, that's the other thing. But it's for some albums, that's not even like a good... way to judge it. I think some albums you cannot listen very so often to it, but when you listen, you really think it's good. So, like, you know, some, especially for when it's very up forward music, some, I don't know, I would say you need to be in a certain mood, but when you're in the mood, then it's just the best thing you can listen to. So I have that, for example, for stuff like White Stripes stuff. I cannot listen all day to White Stripes, but when I'm in the mood for White Stripes, I love it so much.
Yeah. There's actually, speaking of White Stripes, there's a super cool video of like a video series of Jimmy Page, Edge from U2, mm-hmm. and Jack White discussing songs together.
What?
Yeah, what? Yeah, it's super cool. I saw,
crazy,
I watched it where Jack White explains to Jimmy Page and Edge how to play Seven Nation Army and the process behind making it.
Okay.
And they all three of them do a song with each other.
I can see that. They're just talking about music all the time.
It is basically like guitar heads just standing there talking about their guitars and what pedals they used. And
yeah.
But it's pretty neat. And it's cool hearing, because I'm not a big U2 fan.
Me neither.
So I don't know what the Edge's typical guitar sound is.
Well, I know the sound.
But
he really has a typical sound. That I can say.
I know he'll have one, but I just don't know it. I make a point of not listening to YouTube. Like, if I hear it on the radio, I will change it.
Yeah, it's too really much radio like music now.
But Jimmy Page has a definite sound, and so does Jack White.
Absolutely.
And it was interesting then hearing them play each other's music, because you hear, like with Seven Nation Army, you hear Jack White's playing it, but then you all of a sudden Jimmy Page is playing it, and it's the distinct Jimmy Page guitar sound, but playing White Stripes.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
That's cool. About the I would say the marketing or the approach that we talked a lot so far of Led Zeppelin, I think that there's also a good section how Chuck Klosterman wrote about it. And he said that the first is that Zeppelin was the last colossal band who saw no meaningful relationship between their own musical invention and how it was interpreted by the media. It did not matter that they rarely gave interviews and they never released radio singles. Zeppelin's massive success was totally disconnected from how they were covered and what they said in public.
Yeah, that I don't think that would work anymore.
That was
Frank Ocean.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Frank Ocean. That's the newest version. Yeah.
That's also what came to my mind. And still, the one thing that at least Jimmy Page wanna talk about is music. Or like this detailed stuff. At the end of the interview, he explained that, you know, they finished the interview and then he immediately also was a little bit more relaxed and they talked. And for whatever reason, they talked about Clockwork Orange, the movie. And then he was immediately like talking about the music in that movie and how crazy good it was produced for that time, and like talked for a period of time. And he said, well, that's maybe the best to sum it up for him. There is music and then there's the rest. And the rest is not irrelevant for all the outside world for him.
Yeah.
That's it. So, something more for Deep Dive?
No, I think that's about it. It's another one of those albums. You could go track by track, but there's videos online of people going track by track and spending like an hour talking about one song.
As it is so much also in the deep dive about the production and the techniques, how did that, especially for you, change the second listening?
I noticed the guitar thing that I talked about a lot more. I actually noticed bass a little bit more on my second listening. But it didn't change that much. Like, on the first listening, you can tell that it's a super well-produced album. Yep. The second go-around, I tried to pick out all the little Lord of the Rings things that Robert Plant throws into the songs, but I'm not that big of a Lord of the Rings fan, so I couldn't get all of them. But I also thought that was pretty funny for a, and just in the songwriting way, well, a band that was that huge doing lots of references to Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
It was that time, though. So.
Yeah. Well, for me, also, I was, as said at the beginning, I was that I'm especially a little bit disappointed that I could not zoom myself into the 1970s to listen to a modern era.
I had that same feeling.
I said, this is a hard album for me to even after the deep dive get into the direction. Ah, that was new. Like I could not imagine like with other music.
Yeah, same.
And or other bands or other albums. And that was like a little bit like, oh, that's a shame.
That's where you technically would need to go and listen to music from right before it came out.
Yeah.
Or listen to the stuff that was influencing them and listen to their peers at the same time and see what are other people coming out with. And then listen like to music like 5 or 6 years later, because it's not going to be an automatic thing. It's more kind of the kids that listen to their music come out with stuff that is influenced by them. It's not really, you don't see that too often where a band will come out that influences their peers that much.
Yes.
There are, but not in the kind of overly visible way that you see where bands completely influence their listeners when their listeners are younger.
Yeah.
If you get what I mean.
Yeah, they were like a game changer. Like, they're one of the pioneers of hard rock and heavy metal. Like, just the word heavy was used like on a heavy frequent rotation for music when Led Zeppelin came out. That's how I read it. So, and yeah, that's something that would be so interesting to figure out with the modern ear, that you can never replicate it, but for other music or bands it would be easier for me, like for this one. And the other part and second listening was like, I told you I was more focused on the drums again. I thought, well, that guy seems like so good. And in some ways it also make totally sense that sadly Led Zeppelin was done the moment he died.
Yeah, how can you replace John Bonham?
And
you can't really.
Yeah, that was it.
Sad story.
Absolutely sad story. And also like the vocals and the singing style of Robert Plant. Another quote I read in the deep dive was like, that was the first time you hear a guy like almost screaming his voice. He like destroying his voice by singing and still like in combination with that drums and that guitar, that was like something new. And his singing and his voice, I would say unique, you know, now like Wolfmother, they make very good impersonation about it, but still like, you know, that's his voice. Like,
that's his voice. And he was one of the first ones to come with that. That was on the technical side, something after hearing about how they recorded When the Levee Breaks, listening to that song again and just thinking they recorded this with 2 microphones and that was it. That's insane.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds crazy.
It made me want to go to that goal. Like, it'd just be cool to see that recording. Like, be there when they recorded that.
Well, yeah, that would be like one of the... Imagine now they would come out outside. By the way, there is video material like how they recorded that album. That would be like one of the most watched music documentaries ever.
There's one like that coming out for the Beatles, actually.
Oh, yeah. My older brother told me about that. Big Beatles buff. And, well, another topic. But I heard that it shows so many different sides that it's not like also with the mood swings and all that stuff. So not only like, oh, everybody was pissed at each other, but also the other side. So like that you can make your own picture. Sounds good. Well, I haven't seen it.
So, ratings for the album. Basically, everywhere it's rated as like a 5-star album.
From 5 stars.
10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
5 from 5. Yeah, 10 from 10. I think Pitchfork gave it the lowest with a 9.1 out of 10.
For some reason. But, way afterwards. So, not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for influence, it must be a 10, I think.
Yeah, influence is 4 points.
There is no doubt. How about your own taste, your own rating? How you like it?
I really liked it. Minus Jimmy Page's guitar. I like the album as a whole. I actually played it for the kids, and like the little one was dancing to Led Zeppelin, which was hilarious.
Yeah, but she's the rock star.
She is a rock star. But it's and as I think I've said before, we use Led Zeppelin as our toothbrushing music. The Immigrant Song.
Yeah.
Makes them open their mouths so I can brush.
That's very good.
And I come from a land of ice and snow, so it works very well. For my taste, I would give it, like, it's not an album I would listen to all the time.
Yeah.
But if I listen to it, it's not like I'm going to skip anything. It's just good from front to back. It's just not my everyday taste.
I agree with that.
But I would still, though, give it, like, totally, it's basically a perfect album. I didn't really see anything or hear anything that is wrong with it. Like, I don't see how you could give it anything other than, like, a full marks, like a 10.
Well, the only thing that is, like, as you said, is maybe... So to give it a 10 for me, maybe there is like the personal relationship with that album that I didn't add so far missing. So just for the taste. So that's why it's maybe not a 10 and more like a 9. So like the last point is missing because of the personal relationship.
I can see that. I'm still going to give it a 10.
Yeah. I can see that as you're as your professional.
It's just a very well made album, and yeah, it's you can listen to the whole thing, and it's very well made. It's no Taylor Swift, but it's up there.
And what do you think aged the best?
For the song, like song wise, aged the best. Well, it's influence. No,
in general,
on the industry,
what from the album itself was like would also fly today, or you think is like would be like still today a novelty, or would be today like I don't know. Would
some of the songs didn't age well? I don't think you can hear them. You can tell you can tell what time period it's from.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mysteriousness around the album would still fly.
I still think that the mysterio about music will never really die. I think that's a good call.
I think especially nowadays.
Yeah.
We've seen what it's like with Frank Ocean. People, because he has zero presence anywhere, people want more from him. They're too used to having input from their favorite artists constantly. And if they don't, it kind of makes the people want it more. You want what you can't have.
Yes. I also, I'm a huge fan of this to approach things like this, especially music. I just came up with another thing that aged very well that you just mentioned. Is all their references to Lord of the Rings, as Lord of the Rings afterwards get even more popular with all their movies and stuff. That will always fly with people now, even more.
I think it's an album, though, that will... I know some people think that it's lots of their stuff has been copied. But in general, I think it's... It's still an album that for generations it'll be listened to. Like, it's not just going to die out with like our generation. I think it's pretty timeless in it. And I think that comes down to what you had said earlier, that you can just, you listen to it and you can tell this is four guys that are like masters of their craft.
Yes. And yeah, there are certain bands that you also from history that were just a fact. They're this just huge masters of it. And they seem to be one of it.
Like, they don't have a weak point in the band.
That's quite rarely. I never read something meant that, yeah, but, you know, the bassist could be better or something, like, or he's like the black sheep or something. I don't know. That was like all of them were just good.
John Paul Jones is... maybe. No, that guy is insanely talented.
Yeah, and that's...
he can play so many different instruments. That's the thing, that he was like their secret weapon.
And that is something that I think that also like Jimmy Page was like kind of protective. Not only his work, but like the all over Zeppelin work. Like all of it. Like even when he's not really online or really, really talk to Robert Plant, but about the music they did together, there's like no doubt. At least for him. I don't know. So something that aged the worst.
I don't really. Maybe just like the length of songs. I don't know how.
Yeah.
How much a 7-minute song would fly right now for a heavy metal band? I could see it going. There's bands that do that. But for a band that is the global powerhouse of a genre that is like for how many records they sold, having a 7-minute song that it was, but again, different time.
Absolutely.
It's no longer the time where you can, well, maybe in Canada, or Amsterdam, where you can go out, smoke a bunch of grass and then sit there listening to a song for 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah, okay. Colorado and Washington. No. But yeah, I know what you mean. Well, what maybe also didn't age that well is that maybe on the first sight doesn't make sense, as we just said, like the myth about them is something that aged great, is that they're at least, you know, there is not really video material. Like, to at least have it in the backyard, to like at one point maybe there will be released some lot of video material and some documentary. You don't even have to do it, but like everybody's coming out now with this, even about the Beatles and all that stuff. But it seems that they're like,
maybe there is,
but at least nobody talks about it.
I saw a thing today that said, where Jimmy Page said he has an autobiography. Mm-hmm. But he's not releasing it until he's dead.
That's also a part in the interview with Chuck. Yeah.
So who knows what happens.
He played it quite good again.
I think that's about it for Led Zeppelin.
That's about it. As always, a lot of fun.
It was. Do you know what we're doing next time?
Oh, no.
What our new next album is?
I have no clue. Let me know. But it's some pop music. Is it Dua Lipa now?
Yes, we are doing Dua Lipa Future Nostalgic.
Okay, you couldn't stand that I still haven't really listened to Dua Lipa. Now I have to, so.
Okay. No, now you have to multiple times. I still listen to it multiple times every week.
Wow.
Because now Lily...
that's quite...
Lily's obsessed with it now.
Quite sad for Taylor. She went on the throne so hard in your house, and now she's already dethroned by Dua Lipa so fast.
Kicked out.
So,
Dua Lipa, you can dance
it's a hard
to.
Business in your house.
Yeah. On the record shelf, right up in the front.
And almost broken.
Dua Lipa.
To your rock and roll daughter.
Yeah. The rock and roll 1 year old scratched the first track of the record. Don't let 1 year olds near record players. Lesson learned.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we're going to do Dua Lipa Future Nostalgic.
This will be like a also very interesting talk. I'm very curious what I think about that album.
Get ready for a 3-hour episode.
We will see. Maybe I just have to ask questions at that time and don't have to add so many of my views because you will have so many about it.
Yeah, but I want to know your viewpoint.
Okay.
About the album.
You will get it for sure.
There's lots of good resources for it.
Already? Because such a new album.
Tons already.
Okay. Not so many myth about hair.
No. Huh?
Okay. That makes the process easy. Or not, because there's too much information.
No, it's just lots of easy information to find.
Okay.
And lots of it. All right. That's it.
Absolutely.
Next time around will be Dua Lipa, where Beric will have to listen to it nonstop for about the next month and a half. No, still wouldn't get it to the amount of listens we've had here.
Think so.
You'll do your first listen and I'll do my 1,000th listen.
Yeah, that's... Well, then we're like with Block Party, just the other way around.
But this is good music.
Get out. Good that we end the show now.
All right. Now, before we close, I need to hear your John Bonham and John Paul Jones pun.
Oh, now, under the gun. No, I will bring them next time.
I'm waiting for your Dua Lipa puns already.
Okay. I have to make more puns during the show. I have to get more focused. But I can only do it like on a relaxed case. So yeah. Okay.
All right. That's it. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Instagram and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.